Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Story Break, the Writer's Room podcast, where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to turn a humble idea into a pitch for an awesome movie or show. My name is Freddie Wong, just hanging out at home. Yeah.
My name is Ninja Monkey Purple Pirate Cheese Grater. That's right. This one's a super random episode full of random stuff, like a 2000s era Flash web series. My name is Will Campos.
My name is Matthew Arnold, sometimes a writer and director. And according to Wikipedia, I was an English poet and cultural critic who worked as an inspector of schools.
Wow.
So there you go. Yeah. Son of Thomas Arnold. I'm learning a lot about myself.
That's right, folks. It's Wiki Roulette time once again. We sat down. We tried to come up with something. Boy, oh boy, is there a lot of distractions out in the real world for us to come up with our dumb goofs. So we said, you know what? Let old Jimmy Wales carry us one more time. One more time across this battlefield.
Once more, Jimmy, as always.
So Jimmy's great invention, Wikipedia.
That was actually the first original proposed name for Wikipedia, was Jimmy's great invention.
Jimmy's first homepage.
I bet you wish he called it that. See, Jimmy John's and like Papa John's, they all knew what they were doing. Like, he should have put his name in front of it. Other than, you know, everything they do outside of, well, we won't get into that. But okay, let's do this.
All right, so for those of you who are unfamiliar with the rules of Wiki Roulette, Will, why don't you explain to our kind listeners how this works?
So the best button on the Wikipedia homepage, and maybe the best button in all of the internet,
is the donate button, because they need your money.
Hey, folks, it's me, Jimmy Wales. If everyone kicked in $3 right now, Wikipedia would never need funding again.
Hey, Will.
Yes?
It's a cup of coffee.
Huh? That's the price of a cup of coffee, Freddie. The actual best button, the second best button, is the random article button, which will take you to any article on Wikipedia. So here's how Wiki Roulette works. All three of us are going to mash this random article button. We're each going to get a random article, and we're going to do a movie based on the one we like the most. And usually we're clever little boys, so we try to sneak the other two in as well. Gentlemen, are you ready?
Fingers on the trigger.
Are your cursors on zero? We're going to go. 3, 2, 1, click. All right, ready? 3.
I already did it.
Yeah, me too.
You already did it? Okay, I'm doing it. All right. What do you got, guys?
This is going to be an easy one. I cheated.
You cheated?
I mean, I didn't cheat. I clicked on it once, but like, you'll see what I mean. Why don't you guys go first? Because clearly we're going to have to do mine.
Uh-oh, okay. Freddie, why don't you start? Because I've got a rowdy one.
So I got Rataye Poznan. I think I'm definitely pronouncing it wrong. It's a Polish residential area as a part of the city in Western Poland. It's a housing estate, bunch of prefab concrete blocks, housing approximately 90,000 people. Wow. That's a sixth
of
the whole population.
It's not like a style.
No, it is. It's just a large residential area with a bunch of housing estates. Wow. Cool.
And what city is this in?
It's in Poznan, in Western
Poland. In Poznan, in Western Poland. So we've got a Polish neighborhood. I got Orson Hyde, January 8th, 1805 to November 28th, 1878, who is a leader in the early Latter-day Saint movement and an original member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. He was the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from 1847 to 1875 missionary of the LDS Church in the United States, Europe, and the Ottoman Empire. Mormons in Poland is the name of the game.
Ottoman Empire?
Yes.
He wasn't like in the U.S. during like all the rowdy Mormon cowboy killing shit, but like instead he was like journeying around Europe and like spreading Mormonism around Europe.
I mean, it sounds like he was there for both, because he was the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, which I do not know what that is, from 1847 to 1875. So this is like big city, six shooter, rootin' tootin', Utah Mormons.
Damn.
But then it sounds like he also went to the Ottoman Empire. So maybe we can conveniently sidestep any rowdy U.S. stuff that was going
on. No, that's the good stuff, though. That's the interesting stuff.
I gotta say, like, I have a cursory understanding of the tenets of Mormonism. It feels like it's a harder sell in the Ottoman Empire than it is over here. You know what I mean?
What is the Ottoman Empire now? What is that, like Turkey?
Turkey.
What is the...
It's like the center of it. I mean, there's no... Yeah.
Mormonism in Turkey.
Put the links to your stuff in the thing so I can click on them.
You know, the fact that Mormonism hasn't taken off in the Ottoman Empire says to me he didn't do a very good job.
Let's see. Okay. This is from the news. Loading up. Oh, wait, we haven't even talked about Matt's yet. All right, so Matt, what do you got?
Can I say what mine is? Mine is Santiago, which is a film. Santiago, also known as The Gunrunner, is a 1956 film starring and co-produced by Alan Ladd, set in 1896 Cuba against the background of the Cuban War of Independence. Martin Rackin wrote the screenplay based on his unpublished novel, as well as producing the film. It made $2 million. And yeah, it's like a, you know, guerrilla warfare movie or something.
So we've got Santiago the Gunrunner, an Alan Ladd movie about the war for Cuban independence.
Oh,
we've got a Mormon missionary to the Ottoman Empire and a Polish neighborhood. Boys, this might be the hardest wiki roulette yet. I think Jimmy Wales has gotten tired of us drafting off of his heat. And he's thrown us a real curveball here.
Or we could just edit this part out and then just get the synopsis of Santiago and then read it. And then we'll sound super smart like we came up with an entire movie.
Start by telling me a little bit about Santiago. Because what I'm thinking is maybe like there's some element of the plot structure of Santiago. This could be one of those ones where you're like, you know, this movie's like a sort of pseudo remake of Santiago, even though it's set in Poland and features a Mormon guy.
You can tell how big a movie was by how much information there is on Wikipedia, and there's not a lot. There's no synopsis. There's just a premise. And the premise is a hardened gunrunner attempts to take a shipment to Cuba to assist with the rebellion against Spain. So it's like a Gone with the Wind, but like not about the bad guys. That's what it is.
It's about a guy running guns to Cuba
to fight against Spain. Who was in charge of Spain in 1896? This is outside of my knowledge of history.
And was he Polish?
And did he believe in, oh shoot, who's the leader of the Latter-day Saints? Who got those golden tablets?
Smith, old Joseph Smith.
Yeah. Did he believe in Joseph Smith? Okay.
I cannot think of three things that are more outside my wheelhouse of knowing fucking anything about.
Not only are they outside of our respective wheelhouses, they're also like as far away on Earth as you can get from each other, too. It's just like, even spatially, there's nothing to even connect them. It's like, really?
It's also one of those things, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm a very amateur history buff, but I know enough that when I quickly glance through things, I can kind of tell how much effort it's going to take. And when I clicked, when I tried searching for 1898 Cuba, it wasn't like, when I searched the War of 1812, I was like, oh, let me see what's up with the War of 1812. And like, I scanned through the Wikipedia. I'm like, oh, I get it. More or less. Like, there's a lot of stuff I can figure out. But like, I get it. I'm trying to look at 1898 Cuba. And I'm like, oh, this is going to require a couple years of information to like even begin.
Yeah, what you forget is you have like a sleeper cell synapses in your brain that have been waiting since like eighth grade history class when you learned about the War of 1812. Yeah. And they just got activated. They all got the code. Well, and they just showed up to remind you like, oh, yeah, I kind of vaguely remember what that was about.
It's just,
but you got nothing. This is like being in eighth grade all over again, but three times in a row.
It's also just some stuff is relatively simple, but like clearly the stuff going on in Cuba involved the Spanish-American War, involved Spain and their colonialism, involved Cuba, involved. So it's just like there's clearly a lot going on. So.
Well, hold on. Let me. There's some more clues here on the poster for Santiago. I just want to just describe this for our viewers.
It's a sexy poster, there's, right?
This is actually a great poster.
So there's a guy who looks pretty bored, and he's got his gun at waist
That's
level.
That's Alan Ladd, sir. That's Shane, dude. You're not fucking
oh, shit,
just
you're
saying.
Right.
But he does look bored. Like
looks bored, though.
Yeah.
And he's got his gun on his side, which was kind of the way that I guess they used to aim back in the day, which is not
yeah, from the hip.
From the hip.
No one shot iron sides. You know, they all had the perk to do gun running from the hip. Exactly. Back in the-
he has what appears to be a woman in a green dress behind him looking concerned and kind of like
she kind of has like a excuse me sir like look on her like she's got her hands like in front of her
and there's
like,
a bit of and there's a bit of copy here well there's three
can
pictures.
I read this copy
well read the copy but before you do on the bottom there appears to be three pictures which appear to be little snippets from the movie. On the left, some sort of burning building with some human figures on the right side. In the middle, just a portrait of some dude in a cowboy hat. Probably some other probably someone else. And then on the far right, it appears to be some crazy dude holding a furry animal.
So here's the copy. They were like two blazing weapons in the hot Santiago sun. Cash Adams, who'd even take on a tornado for a price. And the girl who put a price on his head.
Ooh.
Whoa. So she put out a hit on
Santiago.
On Cash Adams. No, his name isn't Santiago. He's a white guy in Santiago.
Matt, try and keep up, Matt.
His name is Cash Adams.
Imagine I'm Santiago, wow. And I'm from Cash Adams. Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure this picture of a couple in
a
passionate embrace is Cash Adams. And I believe the woman's name, according to Wikipedia, this is the actress Rosana Podesta as Dona Isabella by courtesy of Lux Film. I don't think that's part of the name whoever added this.
By courtesy of Lux.
I think that's Caleb and Donya in a passionate embrace.
But so she put a hit on his head, so dang,
but she
man.
Put a hit on him.
Okay.
All right. Well, so that's Santiago's the most exciting part of this so far, I gotta say.
Maybe she's Spanish, and then she was trying to get rid of this gunrunner, but then she, you know, becomes sympathetic to the Cubans.
Okay.
In a war that I know nothing about or understand right, so. The geopolitical implications of anything involving this. Okay.
It seems like, all right, to hit this from a couple angles, and then we can kind of try to, because, like, here's our emergency eject break in case of podcast go bad, okay. Is we could just be like, oh, this is like the movie Babel, where everything's just like, it's three interconnected stories across time and space, mm-hmm. And then we can just do three little bullshit movies and just, like, have one element in between them, and it goes like, wow, that makes you really think about, like, the human condition, how, like, these people were here, and then those people were over there, and their stories were kind of the same, and we can do that one.
How about if we had to remake... Because, you know, like, right, somebody makes,
okay,
like,
hold on, I got an idea, I got an idea.
Okay. Okay, all right, just go ahead. Go ahead, Freddie.
Your guy
uh-huh.
is a Mormon gun runner to the Ottoman Empire by way of Poland.
No, so that's actually pretty, well, I don't know if we need a match in this random...
Mormon gun runner, Mormon...
Middle-class suburb in Poland into this, but I was thinking that you could do essentially just like, in the same way that they're going to remake Parasite and they're going to set it in America, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it could just be like, okay, let's remake Santiago.
You could remake this specifically historical drama.
Yes.
About a different thing. Okay.
Well, it sounds, I would not be surprised if it was like this is that's essentially the most general plot in terms of Gone with the Wind, at least Gerard Butler's whatever the guy's name is, you know, the super famous actor
Gerard Butler in Gone with the Wind.
Gerard Butler, Gone with the Wind. But, you know, a gunrunner who is, you know, he's probably like a selfish gunrunner who's just trying to make cash and doesn't give a shit about any of the politics.
So what we're proposing is that Orson Cash Hyde,
yes,
is a Mormon missionary by day and a debonair two-fisted gunrunner by night.
Yes.
And he's in service to, okay,
he's
go
trying
ahead.
To make cash for the Latter-day Saints, because the Mormons were constantly getting pushed out of various states, and they were very poor, right? And they needed the money. They were disrespected. They were essentially a minority group, and they're getting pushed out, and they settled in Salt Lake City because it was literally a place that nobody fucking wanted to live, right? So this dude is off in Europe trying to make shitload of money to bring back to the Mormons, and he's doing that by gun running. We just need to figure out what was going on during the Ottoman Empire. Was there some cool war? And by cool war, I'm, you know, talking about on cinematic language, because all war is evil. You know what I mean?
So, like, Joseph Smith went to this guy and was like, those Ottomans need these AKs. And was like, go forth and fucking slay, bro.
No.
I do want to point out that I don't know why we just picked up on the Ottoman Empire and ran with it.
Because it's funny. Because it sounds epic. It's ridiculous. We say,
like, we already have, like, Poland is not in the Ottoman Empire. We still have to figure out where the fuck Poland
comes from. No, we don't have to do all three.
Well, if the Kaiser had his way in World War I, let me tell you, though.
Look, I'll tell you where Poland takes place. I'll tell you how Poland gets involved in this. When this movie's actually made, we're going to shoot in Poland, because they have good production tax relief, and we could probably find places that match, like, aspects of Turkey. There's no way we're matching a modern day middle class suburb apartment complex in with all of this.
Okay, so here we
go. So just shit on my random Wikipedia thing, huh, Matt? I get it.
Okay, Fred, you can find a way to put it in. Ottoman Empire, 1870s.
I'm having literally the exact reaction that you had to trying to figure out what the Cuban-Spanish yes. War was like while I'm reading about the history of Poznan, this town in Poland. I'm like, how old could this town be? And then so here's the first sentence on the history of Poznan, which has its own main article, by the way. So already we're off to a bad start.
Oh, it is a big. Oh, yeah. Okay.
First line, history. for centuries before the Christianization of Poland.
Oh, I look at it. Yeah, this is not just like, okay, this is not like a residential area. It's like a city.
So, no, basically, there was a village outside of Poznan that got annexed into Poznan in the 20th century. So the village of Rataj does not have, I don't know how you pronounce it, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Was situated right to the bank of the river Warta and was incorporated into the city of Poznan in 1925. Oh my God, I'm
all three.
Explode.
Okay,
why did we do
all
this?
Three of our Wikipedia roulettes are all like 4 years of undergrad study, like of different aspects of the world. It's like, okay. do we want to do Mormons in 1870 America that also fled or were also dealing with the Ottoman Empire?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to square all three here.
Okay.
No, but that's why maybe the guy was Santiago, but that's why you got to go with the pulp. You got to go, by the way, if people who don't actually look on Wikipedia, the idea, if you look at the picture of Orson Hyde, the idea of him being a badass gun runner for our movie is ridiculous. He looks like me on a bad day with a bow tie. Like, it is, like this guy is not being played by classic actor Gerard
Butler.
All right,
I'll throw one other angle at you guys. I'll throw something else at you. So then let me hit you with this. What if we do, after the hit film The Gun Runner, actor Alan Ladd wanted to make another movie, and he wanted to get back into Westerns because he kind of got a little too far out of his comfort zone with The Gun Runner. And so he wants to do a movie where he plays Orson Hyde.
Okay.
And then, like, our story is like a classic old Hollywood showbiz movie about Alan Ladd making this movie about Orson Hyde. And then it turns into his whole thing was that Alan Ladd didn't want to do, because Orson Hyde is like a missionary, right? He's not a two-fisted badass gun runner, right? He's like he went around and, you know, was trying to do, like, you know, Mormon stuff. So, like, you would do that. Alan Ladd wanted to make a movie about this guy. And then it winds up just turning into a spiritual sequel to Santiago because, like, the mean movie producers want him to be, like, a two-fisted badass cowboy. Maybe the movie is our in, and maybe this is a movie about Alan Ladd's next movie.
Okay. If the movie's our in, I mean, can we just stick with one of the Wikipedia? Do we have to try to get all three of them in here?
I mean, if we're cowards, we can back away, but...
Okay. So what you're suggesting is that Alan Ladd post Santiago is like, I want to make a movie about the famous Orson Hyde, who was replaced by John Tyler as president of the Quorum. He's like, I like that guy in history.
And especially the part where he had eight wives.
Here's what I'm also getting at, guys, in terms of avoiding dicey political stuff, is that now we're just doing like whatever Alan Ladd thought that this movie should be about.
Mm-hmm, that's
so,
true.
Right? Like, so it's like a classic Hollywood movie about, you know, people trying to make a movie. It's like one of those, which I don't think we've done on Story Brick.
We've done
a Hail Caesar type thing.
I think the Smoking Camel one, right?
I guess that's true.
He was
that's
like,
just like his life story.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Because then we can take the fact that we're going to be stepping into some probably problematic and not well-informed opinions on certain things. We'll put that onto him. Because it's a story about him. It's a story about Alan Ladd trying to make the most epic. He's like, Santiago was supposed to be my gun with the wind, but it didn't happen. But I'm going to make... It's like his Days of Heaven. What's the...
Heaven's Gate.
It's like his Heaven's Gate.
Yes.
It's like, I want to make a movie about America. Not just America, though. Not the American Empire. I want it to be about the sunsetting of the great empire before it, the Ottoman Empire. And it's about religion. It's about Mormons. It's about the Mormons spreading. It's about the passing the torch from one. Everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, it's going to be about everything. Don't you understand? It's about all of humanity. It's about all of culture. And it's going to be the greatest movie since Gone with the Wind. And they're like, okay. Because Santiago was so successful and made $2 million. So, like, hell yeah. We're ready to pay for this thing. Yeah, it could be, like, an Ed Wood type thing.
Okay. So, okay.
They have to shoot in Poland because that's the only place that'll take
No, them. No, no. The producer, the only person who's willing to pay it.
Oh, wait. I've got something.
They need to shoot there.
Do you do the opposite? Santiago is a big flop. It stinks. No, Alan Ladd can't get arrested in this town anymore. So he goes on a soul-searching trip through Europe, and then Poland wants to be the Hollywood of Europe.
Poznan.
So they want to get Alan Ladd to make a movie with them. And then so they're like, look, we want to do a movie about the Ottoman Empire. And Alan Ladd's like, well, I want to do a movie about this Mormon guy. And they're like, what, por qué no los dos? They're like, why don't we do both?
Okay, no, that's pretty good. Okay, So he is desperate to make another movie, and he's poison in Hollywood now because of Santiago, which we'll just say was a terrible movie that poisoned his career. And there's no financiers anywhere. So he did the trip to Europe, like in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, to go find like Italian money, right? Because people were making spaghetti westerns. But not even there. He couldn't even get money there. So he finds himself in Poznan, Poland, and he finds an aspiring film producer who is looking for the right project. And then he saw Santiago and he thinks he gets it. He's like, I thought Santiago was amazing. What do you mean? What do you mean? Like, they didn't like you. Anyways, you could get that sort of thing where like he acts like a big shot, like right away once he realizes this kid likes Santiago. He's like, oh yeah, I know it's huge in Hollywood. I was just thinking about, you know, bringing my skills. And this kid's like, oh my God, we're so lucky that this guy is here in Poznan, Poland. Are you kidding me? But yeah, I don't know. Okay. You can do something with that.
All right. I got one more heat. Okay. I got one more twist. What if this is just a guy like named Alan Ladd, but his name is like A-L-L-E-N Ladd, and he's been trying to become a movie producer? I don't know. No, that's stupid.
Like he's pretending to be Alan Ladd.
It's a scam artist pretending to be. Okay, yes. It's a scam artist pretending to be Alan Ladd. It's like the producer.
He's like, I wish I picked a more successful person to pretend to be.
He's
going to
raise a bunch of money to make a movie and then disappear with all of it. And then he runs into a Polish film director with a dream, and he gets caught up into it, and then he becomes the star, and he finds out that, like, you know, like he's been putting all of his creativity into doing these cons, but really he always wanted to be an artist. And then he gets swept up into the movie, and it's like one of those, and they got to put on a show. But then they realize that, you know, like, he brings this whole Polish village together to believe in this film, but it's all under the pretense of this big lie. And he has to, you know, sort of come out about it at the end, and he learns a lesson. And then he goes off to make a movie and like for real.
I mean, I think if you do this, it's like he makes a bad. It's like they try, but this should be like a producer style. I mean, if he's gonna make a movie about Mormons and the Ottoman Empire. Like, I don't know if he pulls off a good movie.
No, I'm not saying he does. I'm not saying he does. Know. But I'm saying, like, do you like this idea of it's like a flim-flam man who's like pretends to be Alan Ladd?
For some reason, of everything we came up with, the idea of somebody pretending to be Alan Ladd is the most unrealistic thing.
Dude, Alan Ladd was a big fucking deal in the deal. He was Shane, dude. Yeah, Alan Ladd was a huge actor. He was like a big deal.
During Santiago time? Okay, so he's a big guy.
I don't know any better than you do, but like Shane came out in 1953 and then Santiago was what, 1956, okay, 3 years later, he's still writing that Shaney, dude.
Can't it just be, when did he die?
He died like pretty soon after
1964.
Not to laugh about Alan Ladd's, I think, actually pretty sad death.
Oh no, was it a sad death? Okay, because I guess that does.
He had a cerebral edema caused by accidental overdose of drugs and alcohol. So yeah, pretty sad. He died in 1964.
Okay, so it does mean that we can avoid making it literally about him.
Unless you were gonna do okay, all right.
Oh wait, okay. Right, how about the movie Unless falls you apart do that because the real Alan Ladd dies?
Oh, yes, I literally was just gonna say like, that your big in the act middle two climax of production. Is that the real Alan Ladd dies. Eyes in Hollywood, and then everyone realizes that he's not out.
Yes, everybody in post.
And he has to fake it. He has to be like, "That's actually, I faked my death in Hollywood."
No, I think he has to come clean. Like, he has to come clean, and he's just a dreamer, like this Polish film director who's also a dreamer, right? He's just a guy that's hustling. Like, but they now it's like, is the relationship going to? Yeah, it's classic. It's like it was a lie.
You know what?
It's she's all that, and she was wearing glasses the whole time. He's like, I was an Alan Ladd, but he still loved me, or something.
Hair up, glasses off, Alan Ladd exposed.
Listen, we got ourselves a little head of momentum here. I like it. I like the development here. We're going to take a quick break. I want you guys to think about your sins, and I'll think on mine, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Strange planets, curious technology, and a fantastic vision of the distant future. Featuring Martin Starr.
So we're going on day 14. Shuttle still hasn't come.
Aparna Nancherla.
The security system provides you with emotional security. You do the rest.
Echo Kellum.
Can you disconnect me or not?
Hurry Kondabolu.
I'm staying.
From Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Jeffrey McGiver.
Could you play Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
It's The Outer Reach. Stories from beyond.
Now available for free at MaximumFun.org or anywhere you listen.
I have another heat that I want to add in. So okay. Hear me out. So I was like, okay, you know, like it's a Hollywood movie. What if we do? So I Googled female Polish film directors.
Okay.
And I found a woman named Stanisława Perzanowska, who was born in 1898 and lived until 1982. And so she was an actress, theater, and film director in Warsaw. But hear me out. So what you do is, because I'm looking at her credits, she had something. She was in Romeo and Juliet in 1933, did a couple other movies. She only directed one film in 1936 with another person, I think her partner. So here's what I'm thinking, is you do that Stanisława, she directed this movie, which I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce, in 1936, right? And she thought she was going to be the toast of Polish Tinseltown. And her partner screwed her over, and she got blacklisted from the industry, and now she's back home in her village of Rotja, Poland, and she's been trying to get back on the up and up, like, and she's trying to, like, get her career kickstarted again. And maybe you do, like, she finds this washed up drunk who looks exactly like Alan Ladd, and she's the one who convinces him to pretend to be Alan Ladd so she can get a movie made.
That's a fun little romp.
Okay.
Two people down their luck.
It's a hard scrabble actor who looks like Alan Ladd, and, or he's not even an actor, he's just like a guy, right? And then you've got Stanisława, whose dream has been to make this, okay, yes, this, because she's always wanted to make this.
I think it's good as an actor because it gives him a clear motivation. Like, what that's he's doing true. Is he's like, if I can't make it in Hollywood, I'm gonna go to Europe and I look kind of like Alan Ladd. Oh, the beginning of the movie,
because he looks too much like Alan Ladd.
No, the beginning of the movie is him being a double. He's like his double. Yeah. He plays the Alan Ladd at parties. Like, that's his life. Like, he fucking.
Well, would you say in this case, the movie you're describing there, would you say that those two are like two blazing hot weapons in the hot Polish sun? Alan Cash Ladd, who take on even a bit part for a price, and the girl who put a price on his head. Would you say that that's
a price on his head shot, if you will?
On his head shot? Would you say that that's exactly what's going on right now?
Yes, I would say exactly that. Because then here's what you do. Here's the next heat. Stanisława's dream has been to do her Gone with the Wind, her epic, which is about the Ottoman Empire. She's obsessed with the Ottoman Empire. And then she's like, if I get, this is the 1950s. It's like, no one in Hollywood's going to pay attention to Polish cinema. But if I can get Alan Ladd to be in this movie, I can get it made. But then the
like
studio,
the
Polish studio is like, no. If Alan Ladd's going to be in it, it's got to be a cowboy picture, right?
Guys, this is perfect because in Poland, okay, so obviously we don't know very much, but just doing some quick Wikipedia in terms of timelines. The time that Orson Hyde would be in the Ottoman Empire would be when the Turkish-Russo War is going on, which is when there was a rise up of Poland against Russia.
Whoa.
So you could do, Poland would be equivalent to Cuba and Russia would be Spain. Russia beat Turkey. But like during this, Poland took the opportunity to try to, like, there's a lot of riots and fighting in Poland against Russia. So you could do, like, that's her story she wants to do. And he's like, oh, shit, this is just like Santiago, but Poland against the Ottoman Empire. And then we're going to place a Mormon guy as the romantic lead in our movie called, oh, the movie's called Poznan. Just like it's called Santiago.
Wait. So hold on. You're saying that she wants to do a movie about this Mormon guy from the beginning? Or that that's
No. She wants to do a movie about Poland fighting.
Oh, in the Polish-Russian War. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then we do it with the investors, because they have Alan Ladd, the investors want to be kind of American. Mm-hmm. So they say the main character needs to be an American cowboy or whatever it is. And then I don't know why he picks, maybe he's just Mormon. I don't know why they pick.
Oh, so I was going to say, like, you could do that, like, maybe there's, like, she lives above, like, the one Mormon mission in Poland. And then you do, like,
I got it. She's like, okay. She's furious because she's like, she's a true artist. And she's like, this is, yes, there's obviously leniency because I'm telling the true truth. I'm not saying this is going to be a documentary, but there's got to be some level of reality here. And there's no Americans in Poland during this time. And then the producer, like, looks up. He's like, there was. Orson Hyde was here. And she's like, shit. And then it's like, that's it. It's just because they literally pulled. It's just, this is an American that happened to be there during the time. And she's like, it's like, all right. Checkmate, like, there's an American that was here. So she's like, fine, we'll pick, at least he was here during this time period, so I can reasonably accept that this guy was around.
All right. I want to be on the plot kerjiggering of how they come up with who the Mormon guy is. So just to walk through the kind of basic concept, Stanisława is our main character. She's this down and out filmmaker trying to get her career jump started again. She's been pitching her movie about the Poland-Russian war. I can't believe we've added another fucking war we know nothing about to this movie, to this story break. Okay, but hold on. So she's been pitching this.
I just think you have to come into it with the Alan Ladd lookalike.
Oh, why?
That's the story. That's the Alan Ladd lookalike who comes to Europe, like the down and out guy who's like gonna finagle and trick everybody.
What? No.
Matt, you're walking back 20 steps all of a sudden.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So if I remember correctly, the hook now is that Stanislava is like, she finds this guy who looks like Alan Ladd.
And she convinces
him to lie about
it.
She's gonna convince
him
to be in this movie so that then she can get her movie made. Unless that's not what we're talking about anymore.
No, no, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Does that work?
So what's his thing? He's just happens to be a guy who looks like Alan Ladd.
Okay, that's a fair point. So that was the other end. Okay, so if you were going to do that, all right.
I guess I don't feel like I'm going 20 back because I didn't hear that specific thing. The last thing I heard, because in terms of motivation, I get it from her point of view. With him, unless he's a guy from Hollywood, like, again, I think the plot's essentially the same. I just mean in terms of giving both of them something. Like, I get tracking this guy who looks like Alan Ladd, can't make it in Hollywood. He looks too much like him. He's a double. He goes to parties, you know, dresses him. He hears about money in Italy, whatever it is. He gets, you know, roundabout. He ends up in Poland and he's trying to hustle. Then you have your other character. He then meets this person, this filmmaker from Poland who's desperately trying to make a movie, but there's no film industry in Poland. There's no big stars. She can't get any financing. And then they have a meet cute. And then she thinks he's Alan Ladd. And he says, yes, I'm Alan Ladd. And he thinks, great, she's a big film producer here in Poland, but she's obviously also lying.
And they're both kind of deceiving.
Yes.
The ultimate.
And then I instantly get what both of them want.
Okay. So.
Right. I think that works for both their characters. It doesn't change what you're saying with her.
Okay. So then why is fake Alan Ladd in Poland?
He got on the wrong plane.
He got on the wrong plane.
Yeah, he was going to go to Italy and he shows up in Poland. He's like, shit. That's just that simple. He's like, whoops.
Hot crawdads. I was going to be like, is he Mormon? And then like, he like got like, they're like, I don't know, like his brothers like, go work at my missionary since you can't make it in Hollywood.
That's a good cheap joke is the whole time he's got like an America to Italy like dictionary and like the audience realizes he's on the wrong plane. And then he gets off the plane and he's like, people are talking to him. He's like, I swear I learned some Italian. Like, I can't understand anything.
None of this makes any sense.
And then he realizes he's in Poland.
Okay, so why was he going to Italy?
Oh, because like in Once Upon a Time in America, like people who can't make, there's money in Italy for spaghetti westerns.
Here's what it, okay. No. This is very good. You do that. He was going to get, because he makes his money as an Alan Ladd impersonator, right? Like he goes to people's parties and stuff like that. So you do that. There's like an eccentric millionaire in Italy who is throwing a lavish party and he was going to show up and pretend to be Alan Ladd at the party. But like he got on the wrong plane, so now he's stuck in Poland.
Yeah.
And
the way you get him on the wrong plane too would be like a way to show kind of his problem. Like he was probably like, you know, he couldn't even afford a ticket and he was like, you know, lying to some stewardess and got drunk and like he got it, but because, you know, right, he's just a liar and kind of like a scoundrel, he was like too drunk and he gets on the wrong plane or whatever it is. You know, it's like, it's a classic, like, okay, this guy's kind of like a hustler, but he's also not put together, so he ends up on the wrong plane or whatever.
He's down to his last red cent, you know, because he spent all his money on this plane ticket, right? And he was like, and then you have to do that, like, whoever the guy was in Italy, like, this was going to be part of him getting, like, his actual, like, he has an actual dream, right? Like, this guy in Italy was going to be the connection to that. So that's why he, like, splurged on this or whatever. But, okay, so he's wandering around Poland. He's got nowhere to sleep. And then he's, you know, as he's wandering the streets and the bars, he, you know, has a meet cute somehow, or he crashes like a Polish director's party.
It's kind of like Begin Again, if you want to do it structurally that way. Begin Again with Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo. They kind of show both of their stories individually and how they get to the same spot. So like that would be his story, is like his, you know, losing all of his money, being told he's never going to make it in Hollywood, deciding, you know, get this kind of like Hail Mary pass, going to go to Italy, ends up in the wrong city, ends up in Poland with not a penny to his name, and he's drunk in a bar now, not sure what he's going to do with his life. Mm-hmm. And then you go to her story, and yes, she is this dreamer filmmaker who has this amazing story she wants to tell about the Polish rising up against the Russians during the Turkish, you know, this unseen part of history of the Turkish-Russo War, and we need to figure out exactly what her problem is, but I think she's definitely more idealistic, and it would be the same thing where it's essentially she's told, there's no money here, there's no big stars, you're never going to make it, and she shows up at a bar, you know, drunk, you know, and then she thinks it's Alan Ladd.
I think I've got the angle. You do that, so she had a partner. So for her one movie, she was partnered with this guy whose name I can pull up, but she had she was partnered with another director. So they had a big falling out about the movie because he wanted to compromise its artistic vision to make cash, right? And they had some big fight and she was like, this movie stinks, take my name off of it, like, I never want to work with you again. And then he became the toast of Polish Hollywood after this movie came out, right? So then you're doing that, like, she's still trying to get her next big movie made. this guy is throwing a lavish birthday party or something like that. And she knows that a bunch of producers are going to be there. So she's going to this party, like, and trying to, like, kind of hat in hand. Like, she doesn't want to talk to him, but she's going there to pitch her movie or something like that. Like, she's trying to schmooze. And that's the party that Alan Ladd winds up at. So they think, like, oh my God, you're Alan Ladd. You got to come to this party. And he's like, great, I'm going to find somebody to mooch off of for a couple of months. You know, maybe I'll shack up with a girl and, you know, and while I'm saving up some bucks to finally get to Italy or something like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's how the two of them meet. And then again, he's pretending to be Alan Ladd. She's pretending to be this super well-connected director, and they're going to work on this movie together.
Okay. I have her angle thing. Okay. I have a thing for her. What she wants to do, she has this story that it burns inside of her. She needs to tell it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's set against this landscape of this massive war and like oh, great. It's not only the Russo-Turkish War, but it's like an unseen part of it. It's about the riots and rebellion in Poland. And she's like, but her story is like, her like great-great-grandmother was like a bookseller. And it's like this super small story mm-hmm. that just like, when it pitches, it's like, who wants to watch that? It's like, what? It's a bookseller that like, I don't get it. She just like, she fucking like sewed socks for the soldiers. That's like, what's the story? And she's like, no, you don't understand. It's just like how the smallest thing can matter, you know, in war or whatever. And everybody's like, that's boring as shit. So like, that's what they tell her. Like, nobody wants to see this shit. And yes, he, it's also kind of a little bit like beginning, but like his, her partner heard that. And like, he took it as like, oh, that's a great story. The Polish rebellion, like, right. She becomes like a guerrilla fighter and all this stuff. She's like, no, it's not about that. So what you can do is, she talks up like, they're like, maybe if you get a big star, I think the together, like, it both spirals out of control, because like, she wants to make this movie and she starts making concessions because now she's got this big star and people get excited by it and all this stuff. And I think it like, it's so out of control. It becomes this big picture and like, she's losing her voice, you know, right. And it's becoming this big audacious thing. And all of a sudden she's looking at her little bookseller and they're on the 20th day of shooting and she's got like 20 machine guns strapped to her. And she's like diving out of a Russian airplane or whatever. And then it all comes to a head when they find out he's not really Alan Ladd. So they lose all their money and she's miserable with the script. And then you could do the ending as like a final thing where it's like they have just enough money amongst themselves and they still have the set of the bookstore and they can film, right? They make this like really small final scene. And it is just this really tiny movie that's not going to go anywhere, but she shows it to, you know, the neighborhood. And none of them had known about the history of this like local bookstore or whatever. And it's like they make this like really small, quiet film. And like he gives a great performance and he's really, it's the first thing he's ever been proud of. And she told the story that she wanted to. And but they neither of them get like the big fame or whatever, something like that.
It just feels like that she was just right the whole time. And then she just doesn't learn anything. Like she's like, she should have just like, you know what I mean? Like I'm trying to like what it's
well,
like.
Have her get caught up in it. Like once she gets Alan Ladd, like have it be, you'd have to do that. She loses perspective as well. Like she has to be part of the driving force of the film getting massive and huge.
Yeah, I'm struggling to like, I'm trying to like, what's the rooting interest, right? Like, I'm like, what's the like, because at the end of the day, I don't care about an artist's problems making their art. Like, I'm like, it's kind of like, what's the human story, right? Like the, so like,
romance.
I don't know if it's a romance. Like, I feel like it's, but like, I don't know. There was something to me about like in a kind of Music Man way of like, if this whole little town of Rataj comes together to make the movie, right? Like they're going to make it independent or something like that. And then like he runs off with her, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like,
it's not to just like say the same thing back, but like that, I'm like, I don't have any interest. It's like Be Kind, Rewind. I'm like, okay, it's a bunch of, it's like watching a community theater be put together. Like, that's not a, like, I'm not interested in seeing like what's the rooting interest there that they think this guy's there. So then it's like a comedy about a town kind of trying to be ambitious, kind of like a Waiting for Guffman sort of like thing. It's not really like a drama in that case. It's just like a...
All right. Let's go back to first principles here. We've got our aspiring, hustling director who is an uncompromising artist. You have your degenerate scam artist who looks like Alan Ladd. They meet at a Polish Hollywood cocktail party. And then like... Then what happens, right? Like
the first principles is you have a guy who wants to be rich and famous and be a great actor, and you have a struggling artist who wants to be, he wants to win money and she wants to win an Oscar, right? You have like two dreamers, and then the first principles would be that the low point is they're both going to blow up, like they're going to get close
sure,
to what they want.
Sure, but how does, okay, so, okay, all right. Just in terms of, just hear me out, because I'm just not quite getting like what her journey is. So it's like, again, maybe it's just, maybe she isn't an uncompromising artist, right? Maybe, or like, I don't know. I'm trying to like, what is her arc? Like, what
it's, is, I know it's a little bit, it's tough because it gets in our thing. So I can see it being a little eye rolly, but it's a classic story of art. It is, it's one thing to be a personal artist. It becomes different once there's eyes on you, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we even saw this in our own experience with Rocket Jump on a small scale. It's like, it's one thing to be like, I'm going to tell a story I want. Okay. She probably could have told the story she wanted if she, you know, raised $20,000 and did it herself, right? But she couldn't get that. Now she's got Alan Ladd. Now she's got $20 million in investment. Like, now it's become this huge thing. And she's in, and like, now all of a sudden, like, the story she's telling could be bigger. Now, oh, now maybe the Oscars will see this movie. Like, money and fame and beginning to actually, you know, she never even saw like a huge, I mean, it's tough because we're doing it off this like real person, but if it was just an aspiring director, it's like the actual, the mechanisms in place as people start getting invested in it and she starts actually getting closer to a version of her dream starts getting bigger and there's a cost of that. Does she lose what she was interested in the first place as she starts going down this journey?
Here's what I'm bumping up against. It just feels like a movie about two assholes. Like, I need like one of them to be lovable. Like, and I'm trying to think of like, it's like the, it's just like, I'm not quite feeling like I,
what makes her, I mean, from my point of view,
are they both in on the lie? Like, does she know he's not Alan Ladd? Like, is who's like, what, again, I'm just trying to find the emotional heart of the movie. And like, so it's like, is she, so like, if she's like this, like, I don't know, like, I'm just a little lost.
I think they're both
deceiving each other.
Usually, well, yeah, but it's like, usually if you got a movie about a scam artist, like, it's the scam artist and the mark, right? Then it's like, you know, like the.
There's a difference between. She is right. It's like, it's, she's no different than like a wide-eyed film student who sees a celebrity and mm-hmm. she's going to talk herself up. That's not hustling or deceitful in the way of pretending to be a celebrity. That's mm-hmm. that's what we do in every meeting we go to. I go to Netflix and I don't say, hey, I sit at home and paint minis all day. I mm-hmm. say, hey, I'm a fucking rock star. We had 8 million subscribers. Like, she's just talking herself up. Like, okay. She's just trying to feel bigger than she is in order to make this thing happen. Like, I think she's the heart of the film in terms of she's got this.
Yeah, and he's and the like, one going along with the lie.
Yes, it's going to be tragic that you start seeing her, again, like, fame and this, like, kind of big production is going to start eating away what she wanted to do in the first place, which is tell this really personal story that she thought the neighborhood should know because it's so beautiful and she had an idea for it. And, yes, you're going to see
Why
her.
Why does she get off track? How does she get, like, what does that speak to in her character that she loses track of her dream?
Well, let me try to put it this way. Let's say, pick your most small-scale personal short film that you've ever thought of, and then be like, the next day, Ben Affleck is like, I'm attached to it, and Lionsgate's like, here's $20 million. Do you think it would shift at all?
This just seems like such inside baseball, though. Like, I'm sorry, I feel like I've gotten into a negative energy about the idea, so I'm not trying to shit on it, but, like, I don't.
No. No, but you see that all the time.
I think you don't like these sort of stories. It's literally every single art story ever told is.
So it's her ego? But that's what I'm asking. What is it? I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. So don't turn the question around on me. I'm asking you, like, why does this happen?
I think for.
Like, I don't understand. So explain it to me.
You could do a number of reasons, right? So, like, it is. Like, what do you think? I'm responding to the idea that it couldn't work. Like, right? It's a classic band story in terms of. Small scale people have a thing that they care about. Why do they all turn to drugs and why do they all stop making good music? Like, what's mm-hmm. the process? So it's like, what is it about for her? You could do it that she was, you know, a band person could be somebody who's insecure. So the growth of power and fame suddenly, you know, realizes that that's what they were trying to fill a void in their life in the first place. You know, so what is it with her? Is it that she's not, you know, she doesn't stand up for herself enough so that as, you know, multiple chefs are in the kitchen, she starts losing control of it? Is it about somebody who
is too much of a people pleaser and people are like, oh, we'll give money. And she's like, oh, yeah, we'll let it go your way. And so then she gets stepped over and realizes she needs to assert herself.
Is it about the general danger of dreaming?
These are all reasonable things where I'm like, yeah, it explains it. And by the way, I've seen movies that do each versions of each one of those.
I don't know. It doesn't quite. It just this is like the worst note. It's just not setting my hair on fire. Like, I'm like, I don't quite get what the hook is. Like, why? Like, I don't get what the hook is with the guy who's scamming her either. Like, I don't get what, like, fake Alan Ladd has to do with this.
I mean, for him, it's his chance to finally, like, be in a picture and be a starring role, even if it's, you know, not really, you know, the spotlight in the way that he has. But it's the closest thing that he's got for it. It's why he's drinking himself in a stupor in Eastern Europe in the first place, is he feels that his whole career's gone nowhere. So he gets that hope and that light
of being like, oh, wow, this is why I got into acting in the first place. And it's a cruel twist of fate that made it so that I look just like this other guy in the U.S. But
how is he ever going to find any happiness or contentment if he is never himself, right? Like, I get his story pretty, like, his is going to be, even when at the high points, when this feels big, it's like, what is it ultimately? He's Alan Ladd. What's he even doing? What does he even do any of this for? Is it just about the money? Is that why it doesn't matter that he's pretending to be Alan Ladd? Like, if he really wanted to be himself.
Okay,
like,
can I take a shot at this? Mm-hmm. So I think she should be the only one who knows he's not the real Alan Ladd.
Okay.
And here's what I would do. I would do that she is this gutsy artist who got fucked over by her partner, and she feels like she's got a chip on her shoulder about it, and she's always had this dream project, and she's never been able to get it made, and she kind of feels like the world owes it to her, right? So then you would do that. Drunk, dumb Alan Ladd impersonator winds up in Poland, right? And it is like this kind of just this, he's a born loser with the finger and an L in the shape of an L on his forehead. Like, he's just always been an unlucky guy. He wanted to be an actor, but he looks just like Alan Ladd, so he can't get any work, and it's like all this other stuff. He goes to Poland. No one knows who he is, right? Like, no one really understands that, like, you know, Alan Ladd is this big deal or whatever. She recognizes that he's not the real Alan Ladd, and she threatens to expose him or something like that. She gets him to be like, she's like, you're finally going to get to be the star of a big movie because you're going to be the big star of my movie, right? And so, like, that's how the two of them start working together. And at first, she's just like, great, he's going to be the kindly old owner of the bookstore or whatever, right? And then what you do is essentially, it's kind of like a monkey's paw thing, or she catches a tiger by the tail. She thinks she can control the situation. And then what she realizes is that essentially, like you're saying, it all snowballs away from her, right? And it's all of a sudden the people who are going to give her money are like, wait a second, if it's an Alan Ladd movie, it's got to have cowboys in it. And then you do, like, he starts going along with that because he's the star now, so he's got a little bit more power too. It's like, yeah, there should be cowboys and punching and all this stuff. And so, like, she's trying to, like, hold on to this situation. Does that make sense?
So it's like a be careful what you wish for thing, where her pulling in him into the circle, but he starts to get more momentum and driving it around.
Yeah.
I like where that goes. I like the theme of it. I think you're losing a ton of fun if she knows. I don't think you gain anything from her knowing who Alan Ladd is, like, in terms of her losing control.
I kind of need to know what her sin is. Like, what threshold does she cross that is the wrong threshold? Like in terms of it being a comedy, like, I need, like, her skin in the game a little bit. Like, it's like,
I'm not saying that she doesn't ever find out, but definitely the most fun thing is for this down on her luck girl to look up and think it's Alan Ladd. And then it's definitely most fun for him to lie to her and say, I am indeed Alan Ladd. And then her thinking,
so,
like,
you're saying it's him manipulating her is the dynamic at the beginning.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So he's manipulating her.
Yes.
And so then, of course, yes, well, essentially what you would do is she finds out, like, that's probably one of your first big turns in the second act, right, is that she finds out it's not the real Alan Ladd, but they're in too deep now.
Yeah.
Like,
they're
in way
too
deep, and she's like, fuck, if people find out that they're gonna think I scammed them, right? Like, oh my god, this is a disaster, right?
Yeah.
They're both in for a penny, in for a pound.
Okay, so then it's like these two idiots are handcuffed to each other, and that's the kind, it's like kind of a farcical thing, because now the two of them need to keep up the illusion that he is Alan Ladd, you know what I mean? So then it's like, you know, like, they're like, good news, Alan Ladd, we got this famous cinematographer who worked with you on Santiago is now the DP of the movie. Like, that's a classic thing. Okay, so she buys a pig in a poke, so to speak. She doesn't realize it, but now she's stuck with this guy as she's trying to make her movie. And it starts ballooning. This lie is how it starts ballooning out of control. Because then he starts getting, you know, sort of like highfalutin aspirations. I was going to say, I feel like the climax of the movie, if you want to, they're blowing up and then, like, their reconciliation is that what she gives him is she puts together her cut of the movie at the end or something like that, but it's not starring Alan Ladd, it's starring this guy's actual name, and, like, he actually and it's, you know, the movie's a flop and everyone hates it, and but he actually gets to see his name in lights, and that's kind of the gift she gives him, and then he does something for her or something like that.
I think she makes her small, low budget, the thing she originally wanted to do,
and gets recognized for it,
and it's his name on it, and
it's
not gonna,
I don't think she gets to make her movie. Like, I don't know, I'm gonna go, like, because then why couldn't she have just done that to begin with? Like, the, like, what is this? I don't understand this. Like, well, I'm just gonna go make my small little movie. Like, I don't need that. Like,
I mean, it's not that far away from our God, what's the one we had with the airplane people? I mean, again, it's not to just jump
Mambo
on begin again,
five.
But it's a similar thing with Begin Again. Like, she had this song that she wrote for him. She loved it. Fucking Maroon Number 5 asshole, whatever his name is. Like, makes it
Maroon
hot and poppy.
Maroon Number 5.
Whatever. Fucking douchebag with all the tattoos. Makes it poppy and ugly. But it's really popular. And then, you know, she doesn't make it big. She just makes her small thing with Mark Ruffalo. She just makes a nice album, ultimately, that's true to her. And they release it for free. And she has her version of the song that's just completely her on a piano. And it's nice and simple. And it's what she wanted in the first place. Like, it's, I think for her, it's again, it's a
okay,
classic.
So,
it's like,
all right. So Alan Ladd, fake Alan Ladd is the devil, and the devil gets her to make a Faustian bargain with him for he's like, this is the only way your movie's going to get made. Like, you know, yes. like just come along with me on this wild, crazy ride. And then she gets sucked up in the vortex of I guess maybe it's just this part, the part of it that I think you have to reconcile with the character. I don't think that this is someone who is like this aggrieved, bitter filmmaker that, you know, got fucked over by her partner. Like, that's a different vibe. Like, I think it does have to kind of, to your point, be someone who's been desperate to get her shot, right? Like, that's the kind of energy. So you would do it. She's an up-and-comer director in Poland. Like, you know, again, you know, maybe she blew her chance, right? Like, she, you know, like, and she's been, you know, desperate to break in. She gets this lucky opportunity, and then it's essentially, like, it's about, you know, not compromising, essentially. Or, like, not about not compromising, but, like, you know, like, you know, she compromises her integrity to get the movie made, and then it leads to all these problems. So
all I would say is that, yes.
So, and again, especially because Alan Ladd, it's the classic thing. It's like, you know, like, she's like, oh my God, I'm going to make this movie with Alan Ladd. And she was running her game on him, like you said, like, she was kind of bullshitting him about how successful he was. And then so she finds out he's not the real Alan Ladd after they've gotten bankrolled for this movie. And she's like, I can't believe you did this. He's like, hey, you're no better than I am. You were bullshitting me about, like, you're no fucking, you know, hotshot director. I know, I could smell you a mile away. He's like, but don't worry, this is good. This is the chance for both of us. Like, no one in Poland knows who Alan Ladd is. That's why this is great.
Yes. And the more they lie, the bigger the movie gets, and the more people get involved, and the more it's, the higher the stakes are, and now she's in over her head.
Yeah, and then pretty soon the news starts to get across the pond, and it just gets more and more complicated.
Last thing I'll say is that if this was like a 1950s style romantic comedy, what you would do is the person that they have to pretend, it'd be like they're falling in love, and then a co-star who heard Alan Ladd just got divorced or broken up back in America finds, they hire her for the movie, and now he's got to pretend like, he's got to pretend to still be Alan Ladd with this woman who used to date Alan Ladd like 10 years ago. And he can't let her know it's not her. So now he's like, he has to play romantically with this woman.
Here's what I would say is that you do that. Definitely. Like, here's what I would say. She has a romantic interest on the film set. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you do that. She has like either a boy next door, a girl next door or whatever that she has a crush on, who is also in the film industry. And they have like a kind of cute energy or whatever. Or is the you know, the dweeby bean counter at the studio, right? Is like the person that she's in love with or like has this crush on. But then you would do the paparazzos find, like, she's in one of the, in the middle of one of her discreet arguments with fake Alan Ladd, the paparazzos snap a picture of her, and then everyone's like, who's this new gal on Alan Ladd's arm? And then you would do that. Alan Ladd's ex-girlfriend shows up in Poland to be like, what the fuck, like, who's this hussy you're traveling around with? And like, oh my God, this is getting way too hot to handle.
That's fun.
Okay, so it's the adventures of this guy and girl. All right, I know we gotta wrap up. I still feel like, what is the climax and what is the resolution of the movie? That's the only thing that kind of doesn't, I don't see yet.
I mean, I guess it doesn't blow her back. To me, it's, I think when it all comes out finally that he's not really Alan Ladd, I think she loses the movie ultimately. Like, she pulls the funding. Like, again, it was getting to be this huge, massive production. And then before production starts or after one day of it or whatever, it's pulled out. And maybe Alan Ladd, if you want to do what he gives her, is like, he realizes he screwed her over and he's going to leave. And then he's like, and all she wanted in the first place, if you want to do what the first scene of hers is, that she's asking for a $10,000 grant. She lost the grant, right? It's like a student grant or like a art grant. And she didn't get it because nobody saw her vision because it seemed like a too small thing. Like, all she wanted was like $20,000 for this thing. And then she got Alan Ladd and became this huge, massive movie about it, like Gone with the Wind times two, and it blows up in her face. And Alan Ladd, you know, during his adventures here has, you know, got $10,000 from his, you know, his first paycheck came through, right? He asked to be paid in advance, of course, because he's Alan Ladd, and he gives her the loan. And you could do that, then you cut to, you know, a couple months later, and she made her film that she wanted in the first place, and it's under his name, you know, sort of thing. Maybe
what does she do? Like, that's just, she's like, oh no, and then she gets a check from the guy. Like, I'm trying to, like, what is her climax as a character?
I
like that she gets like sucked into this vortex of zaniness, and that she's going to have to, like, I feel like she's got to come clean about the lie, right?
Yes.
Or she's got to decide to come clean about the lie. And, you know, because she has to realize that this was all a mistake, essentially, right? So you could do something like, she is going to fall on her sword and, you know, get exposed for this lie. Maybe he just disappears and everyone thinks that he really was Alan Ladd and that he did die and that he's just gone, right? Like, couldn't he essentially like kind of double fake his death? And so then she is saved. And especially if you were going to do like that, you know, he sacrifices something in order to do that. But I don't know. I'm trying to think. And like, do you do like the...
Oh, go. She,
like, what does she learn, or what is the, like, you know, like the, or again, even if you're going to do that, there's this big crisis, right? And that they're, oh, okay, because here's something you could do. Like, if part of the lesson, right, of the thing that he was always telling her is, like, you know, like, you gotta, and it's just like, if you're gonna make it a little sort of moral about the artistic process, right, which is that art is, like, you know, like, and especially if she represents this kind of, like, glossy idealism, right, that, like, you know, art is this pure expression of the soul, but then there's also the other part of it, which is crass commercialism, or even just the idea that creativity, right, like that kind of like the show must go on energy, right, of like, no matter what, even if it sucks, you gotta finish it, right? Like, you gotta finish the fucking thing, like, otherwise it doesn't count. Like, you know, you're, there's a million people who are the greatest artists on earth in their own head, right? So could you do that, like, this whole movie falls apart, right? And Alan Ladd is, you know, like, they were about to shoot the climax of the picture, and they, you know, like, then he disappears, right, because the police or something like that. Could you do that? It is like she pulls together a film out of the scraps of, like, this fucking wreckage of this broken ass movie.
Yes.
And again, I still like the idea that it sucks. Like, I like the idea that it is like she puts it out there, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, she finishes her work and premieres it despite all of the embarrassment and all of the crazy shit that happened. And then, I don't know. Does that make sense? Is there something there, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, yes. In terms of, rather than him giving the check, like the original thing, it's like, I would just do that. Yes. It all falls apart because she decides to give up the game. Like, she can't lie anymore. And all the financiers take away everything, and all they have left is, like, it's her and him with a, you know, a camera, maybe whatever, some side character that was friends, and they're sitting in their empty set, more or less. And it's like, it's over. And then, you know,
and then it
pumps up, and it's like, roll the camera. You know, we can still.
Yes. Because essentially, here's what you do. The whole thing explodes. Everyone leaves. She fucking is, you know, her whole crazy thing. Like, the big climactic scene of the movie is never got shot. Right. Like, his big emotional powerhouse scene. And the whole thing's falling apart. You know, she's on the outs with, you know, the gaffer. Like, I think it should be the boom operator is the guy or gal she's in love with, right? And so, you know, she's on her own. It's the long, dark night of the soul. But then she has this moment where she's been watched. She's like, I want to finish this movie, right? I never finished a fucking thing in my life. Like, this could be my one movie. I need to finish it, right? And then what you do is fake Alan Ladd is already on the run, right? Like, he's basically fucking, he's on the next, you know, plane out of the country to get the fuck out of here before the law catches up to him. And then she manages to catch up with him before he flees, and she convinces him to film the climax of the movie. Like, the one last thing, his monologue, the thing they needed to put it all together, right? So she tracks him down, and then you do, like, she's got to direct his ass off. He needs to, like, this is the first time it's really him being the character. You can even do, like, in the context of the movie, it's this scene that they kept kicking further and further down the production schedule because they could never get it right, because he's always pretending to be Alan Ladd. He's never being himself, so it never felt right.
Yeah,
so
then,
like, she manages to capture it, and she, you know, she has to convince the love interest, the boom operator, to come along with her on the adventure, and the two of them, like, you know, shoot this final scene as the cops are closing in, right? And maybe he even gets hauled off to jail. He gives up his freedom to finish the film, and then they screen the movie at the end, and it
in
sucks
prison.
But yeah, they screen the movie in prison.
Yeah, you see the end, and he screens it in prison.
Yes.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that's the ending. I think maybe he probably chooses, like, her thing is to keep the movie going, and then he's ran off, and then maybe even do the thing that she doesn't know how she's going to film the final scene, and
then he shows up on set.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's great.
And she's like, cut, that was perfect, and the cops come blaring in.
Yeah, and then
you cut to, like, 8 months later, and he's in prison, and then they're like, hey, we have a special movie screening for you guys.
Yeah, and then it's his name up top.
All the prisoners are booing. They're like, this is boring, and then you just cut to him, and he's just weeping.
Yes, and he's weeping, she's weeping. That's great, I love that. It's very Sullivan's Travels, kind of.
Yeah. Well, that's...
Oh, we pulled it. Whew, we got it.
We finally made a movie about movies, the most self-indulgent genre in all of Hollywood. Storybreak has finally succumbed to it.
Blacked out. Where do we even start? It was Mormons and... Santiago, Cuba, Russia.
Yeah, the big climactic scene is Orson Hyde leading the Mormon cavalry into battle against the Ottoman Empire. And he's giving his big speech about the Church of Latter-day Saints, and then they go in like their Teddy Roosevelt Rough Riders charge against the Russian army.
You know what? It's a terrible movie. They're like, we're just going to release it. And then there's one good scene. It's the one honest scene they filmed at the very end. And even the prisoners are like, this is like deeply offensive and historically inaccurate and boring. Like, you did everything wrong. Like, this is bad. Like, yeah. Okay.
It would be the only bad movie that we've ever come up with.
So that's the story of Poznan. the two-fisted follow-up to Santiago.
Great.
Hey, that came out pretty good.
Yeah. I think that's a fun
one. I was worried there for a second. You know it's bad when the story boys start getting grumpy with each other.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week, folks. Thanks again for listening. Thank you to the Maximum Fun Podcast Network for having us on. MaximumFun.org for all your podcasting needs. A few weeks ago, Matt and I were on We Got This with Mark and Hal to debate and settle once and for all what the best Mission Impossible movie is. It was a good one. The answer may surprise you.
The answer or may, probably not.
Or maybe not. But that one was a lot of fun. So check that out on the Maximum Fun Network. We got this with Mark and Hal, Matt and I, just helping them out in terms of deciding what the best Mission Impossible is. You can check out our Twitter at RJStoryBreak. You can check out our Facebook group, bit.ly/StoryBreakFB. And Chad Ellis edits this podcast. Thanks, Chad, for cutting down our nonsense.
Thanks, Chad.
He slices. He dices.
Slap chop.
He slap chops.
And Vince.
You're going to love my cuts.
Well, until next time, folks, we'll see you then. My name is Freddie Wong.
I am Will Campos.
My name is Matt Arnold. And Will was right. Alan Ladd is very famous. Look at those Wikipedia.
Macho Man to the top rope. The flying elbow. The cover. We've got a new champion.
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast. Oh, yeah.
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded. Yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Saturdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah. Dig it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.